This is CNN Breaking News.
Welcome to our viewers here in the United States and around the world. I'm Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room. We're following breaking news. President-elect Joe Biden declaring, and I'm quoting now, America is back, as he formally introduced the key cabinet picks. He said the team shows the country is ready to lead the world, not retreat from it. And in a major development, the White House has just given formal approval for President-elect Biden to start receiving the president's daily intelligence briefing, and it's working with the Biden team on when he'll receive that first briefing. Also breaking, President Trump touting American greatness just a short time ago at the annual White House turkey pardon. But the president himself is undermining that greatness by refusing to concede the election and by continuing his brutal attacks on the vote. We're also following breaking pandemic news. The U.S. has now passed 12.5 million cases, and more than 258,000 Americans have died from COVID. And in an especially troubling sign, hospitalizations here in the United States right now are at the highest level since the pandemic began back in January. Let's begin with all the breaking transition news right now. Our senior Washington correspondent, Jeff Zeleny, is joining us. Jeff, we're learning that the president-elect, Joe Biden, will now have access to this really critically important, highly classified information.
Wolf, it's called the Presidential Daily Brief, and of course there is one president at a time, but for at least a short period of time over the next 2 months, two men will be receiving this. We just heard a few moments ago from President-elect Joe Biden. He said he has not yet received a briefing, but he will be receiving one soon. Of course, this comes after the White House signs off on him being able to see this classified daily briefing. Now, all of this is coming, Wolf, 3 weeks after Election Day, when Joe Biden clearly sent a message today, it's time to turn the page. As he said, America is back.
It's a team that reflects the fact that America is back.
A changing of the guard tonight, yet familiar faces of the Washington establishment as President-elect Biden introduces the first wave of nominees to his cabinet.
Ready to lead the world, not retreat from it. Once again, sit at the head of the table. Ready to confront our adversaries and not reject our allies. Ready to stand up for our values.
3 weeks after Election Day, and 17 days after declaring victory, a roadblock finally lifted for Biden's peaceful transition of power. He made no mention of President Trump, but in the biographies of his nominees, and through their own words, Biden and his team sent an unmistakable message that the chief goal of his administration is to return the country to a pre-Trump era.
America, at its best, still has a greater ability than any other country on earth to bring others together to meet the challenges of our time.
For Secretary of State, Biden nominated longtime advisor Tony Blinken, who told an emotional story of his stepfather's Holocaust survival.
He ran to the tank. The hatch opened. An African-American GI looked down at him. He got down on his knees and said the only three words that he knew in English that his mother had taught him before the war. God bless America. That's who we are. That's what America represents to the world.
For Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, an immigrant and 20-year veteran of government service.
The Department of Homeland Security has a noble mission to help keep us safe and to advance our proud history as a country of welcome.
As Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines, the first woman to lead the intelligence community.
You've selected us not to serve you, but to serve on behalf of the American people, to help advance our security, our prosperity, our values.
As Special Climate Envoy, John Kerry, in a new cabinet-level post.
To end this crisis, the whole world must come together.
As U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
In my 35 years in the Foreign Service across four continents, I put a Cajun spin on it. I called it gumbo diplomacy.
And as National Security Advisor, longtime aide Jake Sullivan.
You have also tasked us with reimagining our national security for the unprecedented combination of crises we face at home and abroad.
Tonight, across the government, so-called landing teams from the Biden transition are getting their first look inside agencies. There are sighs and signs of relief, particularly with the looming fight against a deadly pandemic. One CDC official telling CNN, "This is what we've been waiting for, is for them to send their landing team here and set up shop."
Now, Wolf, as this transition is taking place across the government, we are learning some new details tonight. Just a few moments ago, President-elect Biden spoke to reporters as he was leaving his transition headquarters, and he said he has not yet spoken with Dr. Anthony Fauci, of course, the nation's top infectious diseases doctor, but he said he would. He also said he has not yet received the presidential daily brief, but he said once he does, he will receive it regularly. He also was asked if he would speak with President Trump. Of course, his name was not mentioned at all today here in Wilmington, and this is what he said. Of course I would if he asked. Wolf?
All right, lots going on. Jeff Zeleny, I want you to stand by. We'll get back to you in a moment, but I want to go to the White House right now. Our chief White House correspondent, Jim Acosta, is joining us. Jim, I understand you're getting some new information from your sources. What are you learning?
That's right, Wolf. We are learning the General Services Administration gave the White House an early heads up that GSA officials were preparing to formally ascertain that Joe Biden won the election and begin the transition process. My colleagues, Kristen Holmes and Jeremy Erb, say that heads up happened on Friday, and a White House official confirmed that GSA heads up to me as well. We're also reporting there were multiple advisors persuading the president to come to grips with the reality that it's over. And President Trump did emerge today as he tried to take credit for the rally on Wall Street that we saw earlier this afternoon in a bizarre appearance in the White House briefing room.
I hereby grant you a full pardon.
Pardoning the Thanksgiving turkey at the White House, President Trump sounded like he'd rather be back on the campaign trail, fighting to win an election he's already lost, as he described COVID-19 as the China virus.
During this Thanksgiving, we extend our eternal gratitude to the doctors, nurses, healthcare workers, and scientists who have waged the battle against the China virus.
The president also turned his carving knife on former Defense Secretary James Mattis, who is recommending that the incoming Biden administration abandon Mr. Trump's America First foreign policy approach.
America First. Shouldn't go away from that. America First.
As he has since his defeat 3 weeks ago, the president didn't take any questions. Earlier in the day, the president made a surprise appearance in the White House briefing room that lasted approximately 64 seconds to take credit for the Dow crossing the 30,000 milestone.
Thank you very much, and I just want to congratulate everybody. The stock market, Dow Jones Industrial Average, just hit 30,000, which is the highest in history. That's a sacred number, 30,000. Nobody thought they'd ever see it.
Once again, Mr. Trump declined to take questions.
Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
But hold on. Wall Street analysts say the market news is due in part to the federal government's move to begin the transition process and President-elect Joe Biden's selection of Janet Yellen to run the Treasury Department. Before the election, the president predicted a market crash if Biden won.
They say the stock market will boom if I'm elected. If he's elected, the stock market will crash.
You will have a depression. Who has 401ks in this group? Anybody? If he got in, wave bye-bye to your 401k, because it's going down the tubes.
CNN has learned that a group of top Trump attorneys and advisors spent hours on Monday persuading the president to yield to the transition process. A source close to the White House said one big factor was the growing outcry from Republicans after the president's personal attorney Rudy Giuliani's disastrous news conference last week. The source described the performance as a blank show, adding things have changed significantly since last Thursday. After the president tweeted his approval to the General Services Administration's move to free up transition resources, another White House advisor said, there you go, it's over. Another sign of progress, a letter from White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows to staffers stating, as you may have seen, the GSA administrator has made an ascertainment to allow for the start of a presidential transition. I want to remind all employees of existing procedures and guidance that we must adhere to throughout this administration. But Meadows cautioned, unless specifically authorized, personnel are not permitted to speak directly with a member of the Biden transition team or the federal transition coordinator. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar, a key figure in the nation's pandemic response, said he'll be working to help the Biden team.
We are immediately getting them all of the pre-prepared transition briefing materials.
Now, we did see signs that the official transition process has now begun. We are told officials from the Departments of Defense, State, and Homeland Security all met with members of the Biden transition team today. That's how things are supposed to work here in Washington. But there are some elements of this transfer of power that are still amiss, as the president has yet to say the words that he has conceded the election. A close advisor tells me the president plans to keep these election challenges going, even though they won't be successful. As this advisor put it, the president still has other advisors whispering in his ear, telling him he could still win the 2020 election. Wolf, as strange as that sounds.
Well, that's about as strange as it does sound. 57 days to go until Inauguration Day. Jim Acosta at the White House, thanks very much. Let's get some more on all of this. Our political director, David Chalian, is joining us, along with CNN legal and national security analyst Kerry Cordero, and our senior Washington correspondent, Jeff Zeleny, is back with us. David, I know you were watching closely as the president-elect introduced his national security and foreign policy team today. So what stands out to you about who the president-elect selected, the message these nominees conveyed during this initial appearance?
Yeah, I mean, on the who initially, Wolf, it's the expertise, I think, that stood out and was, a contrast to what President Trump had put in his cabinet initially. Not that he didn't have people from business or other areas, but these are folks that Joe Biden put forth who have been working in these departments, in these areas of expertise across the government for their life's work, and now have risen to the level of being named by a president-elect to sit atop these agencies. So there's real expertise that he put front and center. But then, of course, tonally, from a message point of view, you heard these nominees say time and time again that they were going to deal with facts and truth and science, and they knew the president-elect would ask the tough questions. Even the president-elect himself said, I don't want to be told what I want to hear. I want to be told what I need to hear when it comes to intelligence. This was all of those words, all of those code words were to signal that larger frame that you mentioned at the top from Joe Biden, that America is back, and that they wanted to draw a real contrast with what they see the way in which the Trump presidency has handled truth and facts, which is not all that well, obviously. And finally, just the sheer diversity, I think, was part of the message as today as well. And President-elect Biden spoke to that. I mean, you saw some real barrier-breaking, history-making appointments, whether it is the first Latino, an immigrant, who's going to head up the Department of Homeland Security. You have an African-American woman. You have the first woman heading up DNI, the Director of National Intelligence. So all of that was clearly put together as well to show, as Vice President-elect Harris said, Joe Biden committing on his promise of putting together a team that looks like America.
He certainly did so far. We'll see what happens down the road. Kerry, you've devoted a significant part of your legal career to issues, key issues of national security. So what do you make of this team that President-elect Biden has now assembled?
Well, the word that just kept coming to my mind, Wolf, in seeing these names and seeing them speak today was experience, experience, experience. The amateur hour is really over. And I think that is so much of what the Biden transition team is conveying with these particular selections. As David said, individuals who have served at the deputy levels in the agencies that, or the, in Avril Haines's case, the intelligence community, which now she's going to lead. Mr. Mayorkas having been the deputy at the Department of Homeland Security, which now he's going to lead. So these are people who bring substantial, meaningful experience to the role that they are now going to be in. And they'll bring their own leadership style, the new priorities that the Biden administration will have, but they will come into these departments and agencies with all of that years of experience and substantive knowledge about the homeland security and intelligence issues that they are going to be working on and they're going to be leading. And the other thing that I took away from their remarks today was the concept of service. These are individuals who have served and really understand, and I think conveyed in their remarks, the value of what it means to be a public servant, and that they are there to protect America. They are there to do the best job that they can to serve these departments well and serve the American people well, as opposed to any other objectives, particularly things that we've heard out of the Trump administration and Donald Trump's approach to things, which have been more about me or the individuals involved. These are people who are dedicated to the roles and the service that they're going to provide to the country.
Yeah, that's an important point as well. You know, Jeff, the tone of today's event was a stark contrast to what we've grown accustomed to over the past 4 years, namely because the president-elect stepped back, allowed his nominees to have the spotlight. Is this what we should expect from the Biden-Harris administration?
Well, I think it absolutely is. And I was sitting in that room and just watching President-elect Joe Biden. At times, he crossed his arms and he was watching some of these men and women who are, in fact, protégés of his. He has watched them grow up in the government. So the Biden doctrine courses through so many of them. So I do think that this is not a president who is going to be front and center on every announcement, on every moment of sending out conflicting messages. This is a team with a plan. Now, we should point out that most of these, or all of the nominees, face confirmation in what is now a Republican-controlled Senate. But many of them have been confirmed in other positions before, at least some of them have. So this is something that, you know, even talking to a few Republicans on Capitol Hill that I reached out to today, they, you know, believe this is a serious bunch. So no one in this group, at least initially, raised any concerns. But Wolf, watching this, this shows Joe Biden has turned a page. This is the government he's been creating, he's been waiting for, entirely different. The Trump era is soon to be over, Wolf.
Very different indeed. And David, we did see, as we reported, the president twice today. Once he took part in the annual Thanksgiving tradition of pardoning a turkey. But before that, he held this very bizarre 64-second so-called briefing, the statement he made, not taking any questions, of course, where he touted the success of the stock market today. What was that all about?
You know, it's amazing to see President Trump over these 4 years not learn the lesson to not ride the highs and lows of the market with his public comments. But he's always wanted to attach himself to the highs and try to distance himself from the lows. It doesn't work that way. You sort of live and die politically if you attach yourself to the market with the highs and lows. And today he wanted to get out there and celebrate a high. If the market goes down again, he has to own that as well, as much as he'll try not to, Wolf.
Yeah, and the market was doing really well. It's been 3 weeks since Election Day, and investors, Wall Street, clearly reassured that the transition is going forward. They're reassured by Janet Yellen that she's going to be the Treasury Secretary. There's positive things unfolding as opposed to what the president was predicting, that your 401ks were going to disintegrate if Biden was elected. Well, he was elected, and your 401ks are not disintegrating, fortunately, on that point. David Chalian, Kerry Cordero, Jeff Zeleny, guys, thanks very much. There's breaking news just ahead. The White House testing czar, Admiral Brett Giroir, joins us live. We'll talk about potential changes to the recommended coronavirus quarantine time. And up next, we'll talk about the stark contrast between the Trump administration and President-elect Biden's cabinet picks, with the former senior advisor to President Obama. There she is, Valerie Jarrett. She's standing by live. Breaking news this hour, President-elect Joe Biden formally introducing key cabinet picks, calling it a team that shows, and I'm quoting him now, America is back. Let's talk about that and more with Valerie Jarrett, former senior advisor to President Obama. Her new book, by the way, is called Finding My Voice: When the Perfect Plan Crumbles, the Adventure Begins. Valerie, thanks so much for joining us. You obviously know the president-elect very well. You worked with him for 8 years. What do his newly revealed cabinet nominees signal to you about his priorities as he's getting ready in 57 days to take office?
Well, good evening, Wolf. I think what it signals is the importance of competency, experience, judgment. He selected people that really reflect the best of the American story, who believe in hard work and service. And not only does he have the most talented people surrounding him, but he also has the best team. They've worked together in the past, they trust one another, and they will be singularly focused on the priority of keeping America safe, ensuring that we return to the rest of the world who has been anxiously missing us over the last 4 years. And so to have both the diplomatic and the intelligence leadership out there in full force today, I think I breathe a sigh of relief, and I think America and the world should be heartened by the caliber of the folks that will be leading our country in this very important space.
Valerie, I want you to listen to the messages we heard from these nominees earlier today, including some rather not so subtle, ways it seemed they sought to distinguish themselves from the outgoing Trump administration. Listen to this.
We can't solve all of the world's problems alone. We need to be working with other countries.
America is back. Multilateralism is back. Diplomacy is back.
The Department of Homeland Security has a noble mission to help keep us safe and to advance our proud history as a country of welcome.
You value the perspective of the intelligence community, and that you will do so even when what I have to say may be inconvenient or difficult.
Reimagining our national security for the unprecedented combination of crises we face at home and abroad, threats to democracy, racial injustice.
President Joe Biden will trust in God, and he will also trust in science.
Who will ask tough questions, demand that we be guided by facts, and expect our team to speak the truth.
So, Valerie, what's your reaction when you listen to that?
Well, it is a sharp contrast, most definitely, to the current administration. Tone starts at the top. I think President-elect Biden made it clear in the course of the campaign, and he will do that each and every day in office, that he's committed to us, all of us, in representing our country ably, and to surround himself with people who share his priorities and his values. And yes, they did deliver a sharp contrast to the Trump administration, but I think they also enrich their leadership skills by telling their stories, where they come from, what their backgrounds are, their approach to the jobs that they have, their approach and appreciation for service. And yes, the importance of telling the president-elect and then the president the truth, even if it's something that he doesn't want to hear. All of that is a sharp contrast, but I think it sends a signal to our country and to the world that not only is America back, but we're back stronger than ever, and we will build back better than we have ever done before. What an incredible day. We are so fortunate to have their service.
Yeah, they certainly did send a very strong message, a signal, as you point out. Valerie, thank you very much, Valerie Jarrett, joining us. There's more breaking news we're following. We're now learning that the Trump administration is considering shortening the recommended quarantine time for people who may have been exposed to the coronavirus. We're going to talk about that and more with the administration's coronavirus testing czar, Admiral Brett Giroir, who's standing by live. We'll discuss when we come back. Now have our first look at the team President-elect Joe Biden is assembling for his administration, a team he says shows that, and I'm quoting him now, America is back. Joining us now to discuss, Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger of Illinois. He's a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman, you're also a U.S. Air Force veteran. You continue to serve in the Air National Guard. I wonder what you make of the foreign policy national security team the President-elect is now putting together.
Well, it's definitely some big names. I think it's going to show kind of traditional Democratic foreign policy. You know, when we talk about things like alliances, that's going to be important, you know, NATO, et cetera. But how do you hold those alliances accountable? And then when you look at the Middle East, one of my big concerns is just, you know, reentering the Iran deal when we really have Iran retreating out of a lot of areas in the Middle East. But that said, I think, you know, the president-elect obviously has a right to put his team together, and I'll give them all a fair shot. In my mind, you know, everybody deserves a fresh start, and I will professionally oppose them when I need to and support them when I can.
Yeah, well, that's encouraging to hear that. The formal transition process is now underway, as you know, Congressman, but the Trump administration can decide just how much it will work with the president-elect's incoming team. In terms of national security, how critical is it that this transition is as cooperative, as fulsome as possible?
Well, I think it's critical because, look, we have so much out there we're dealing with. We find out, you know, about a potential conflict between Russia and the United States right now. We talk about the importance to push back on China. This is going to be a long-term fight that goes beyond even the next president, something that we have to rally around. And, of course, we have in our very near term this virus, and how do we get out the vaccines when those are available? What's the best way to do that? So I think the sooner that we can go to a full transition, the better. You know, the president, President Trump is still president for the next couple months. But the more that President-elect Biden can, when he's inaugurated, get off running, that's always better. I think we have to sometimes as a country, because we get so kind of focused on our internal battles between Republicans and Democrats, that's something that's important to remember. We are all Americans, and literally about 90% of stuff around the world we all agree on, and I certainly want the next president to be able to get a good leg going when he gets started on that.
I mentioned your military service to our nation, Congressman. As you know, President Trump has announced plans to withdraw troops from both Iraq and Afghanistan, and to complete that withdrawal just 5 days before President-elect Biden takes off, as you and I spoke with Democratic Congressman Seth Moulton the other day. He's a Marine who served in both Iraq and Afghanistan. You both of you disagree with President Trump on this decision. How would you like to see the Biden administration respond to this move?
Well, I do think it's important for the president-elect to come out and talk about what he's going to do. I mean, I think 2,500 troops is almost untenable. At that point, you're really just in a posture of protecting yourself. I think the message that sends to our enemies that we're eager to retreat is bad. It can be used as a good recruiting tool for them. And so I do think at some point soon, the president-elect's going to have to come out and say, would he go back to where we're at now? Would he keep it at 2,500 or fully withdraw? And I think the president, President Trump, has put him in a bad position because either way he decides, he's going to be making a definitive decision. And I really think that decision should be left to the next administration in the first point. So I still don't understand why the president has gone to 2,500. I don't understand, you know, how this is following through on any kind of a campaign promise, because his main promise was the defeat of ISIS, and reduction of these numbers of troops is only going to serve as a recruiting tool for ISIS, as they can go to disaffected people and say that, look, we ran the United States out.
I know you and Congressman Seth Moulton, you both disagree with President Trump very strongly on this critically important issue. Congressman Kinzinger, once again, thanks for your service. I hope you have a happy and a safe Thanksgiving. Appreciate it very much.
You too, Wolf. See ya.
Thank you. The CDC is now warning Americans not to travel for Thanksgiving as the coronavirus pandemic is surging all across the United States. But guess what? Millions of Americans are traveling anyway, and experts are urging people to try to protect themselves from the virus while flying. Seeing as Brian Todd is joining us right now, Brian, so what steps can people take to make air travel safer?
Well, as you alluded to, Wolf, not getting on an airplane at all is one of the tips that experts are offering. But if you feel like you have to fly, there are some specific measures that you can take to reduce your risk.
The CDC has recommended that Americans don't do this, cautioning them not to travel for the Thanksgiving holiday. But on Friday and again on Sunday, more than a million people each day pass through security at America's airports, breaking an air travel record in the U.S. during the pandemic. And the busiest travel days for this holiday haven't even come yet.
This is not the time to be flying when there are coronavirus hotspots essentially in every part of the country, when there is explosive spread.
Many passengers seem to know the risks and are still flying.
Honestly, pretty scared of going back home because of corona. I'm trying to take a lot of precautions, but it's still really terrifying.
At some point, it's too hard to stay away from family, especially for the holidays.
If you feel you have to fly, experts are offering some important advice.
If I had to travel, I'd be wearing gloves, a face mask, and a shield. I wouldn't be eating on the plane, and I would do my very best not to have to go to the lavatory.
Other advice from the experts we spoke to? Keep your mask and face shield on the entire flight. Try to find a seat by a window so you're not close to people walking the aisles. Don't sit in rows that have the middle seats filled. Don't touch your face during the flight. Bring your own hand sanitizer and wipes. Wipe down the tray tables, the armrests, your entire seating area. And one expert has some advice about a dangerous period of your flight that many of us may not have thought of.
One of the most dangerous times is during the boarding process, when everyone is crowded together and when there isn't fresh air being pumped in. And so try to minimize that time standing in the jetway, standing while boarding as much as you can.
But again, the CDC is saying not to travel, and experts are worried about Americans' behavior over Thanksgiving and what comes next.
Almost certainly, people are now going to be seeing loved ones. They're going to be staying in someone's home. They might be having dinner together. And remember that people are coming from all over the country, where there are coronavirus hotspots everywhere.
I'm afraid that 2 or 3 weeks after Thanksgiving, and then again after Christmas, we're going to be seeing spike upon spike. This is a very difficult time for all of us.
And the experts we spoke to say that airplanes and airports are not the only places where you may run some high risk. They say that be careful when you use ground transportation, shuttles, trains, taxis, and Ubers. If you feel like you have to take a taxi or an Uber to and from an airport, make sure that you open the windows en route.
Wolf?
That is really, really critically important information you provided to our viewers. Brian, thank you very much. This is so, so scary what's going on. I just looked at the numbers. More than 1,700 Americans so far today, and the day is by no means over, so far 1,700 Americans just today have already died from coronavirus. Brian Todd reporting for us. Thank you very, very much. There's more breaking news we're following. President-elect Biden introduces key members of his team and signals a break with President Trump's isolationist policies. There's breaking pandemic news tonight. The U.S. coronavirus death toll has now surpassed 259,000 people, and the country now has confirmed more than 12.5 million coronavirus cases. Our national correspondent, Athena Jones, has more from New York.
I can't prevent anyone from getting COVID. All I can do is try to keep COVID from killing you.
As coronavirus infections explode across the country with no signs of slowing down, healthcare providers are pleading with Americans to do their part to stop the spread.
So what we need is for people to step up and to wear masks and to distance from people and just try to keep themselves safe and everybody else safe.
New COVID-19 cases topped 100,000 for the third week straight, with hospitalizations setting a record nationwide for the 14th day in a row Monday. 14 states reporting their highest number of hospitalizations yet. Officials warning if the virus continues to spread out of control,
you may not be able to go in and get your heart attack treated. I've heard hospitals not being able to provide care for pregnant women because they're filled with COVID beds. So that's the reality.
In fact, Ohio's governor said hospitals in his state are approaching capacity, and health officials in Pennsylvania warned they could run out of ICU beds in a week. In California, where ICU admissions have risen 55% over the past 2 weeks, the Los Angeles Board of Supervisors is considering more closures. New Mexico is seeing uncontrolled spread of the virus, with infections more than doubling week over week. The state setting new records for cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. And in Kentucky,
we're being overwhelmed with a record number of cases, with hospitalizations going up, with numbers of individuals in the ICU increasing every day.
This, as one new model predicts COVID-19 cases in the U.S., could nearly double by inauguration day to 20 million cases. And another well-known model projects 140,000 more people could die over the next 2 months. And more children are becoming infected, with more than a quarter of a million new COVID cases in children in the 2 weeks ending November 19th, according to a report from the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Children's Hospital Association. Meanwhile, a new Axios Ipsos poll found more than half of Americans now say they would take a first-generation COVID vaccine, an increase of 14 points since September. An FDA committee is set to meet December 10 to consider an emergency use authorization for Pfizer's vaccine. And if all goes well, the U.S. could start distributing doses soon after.
We believe we can distribute vaccine to all 64 jurisdictions within 24 hours of FDA authorization. Then, we hope administration could begin as soon as the product arrives.
And now the White House Coronavirus Task Force is taking another look at how long people have to quarantine to be safe from COVID-19. Assistant Secretary for Health Admiral Brett Giroir says evidence suggests that a shorter quarantine complemented by a test may be enough to slow the spread of the virus. And so a 14-day quarantine may not be necessary. They're working on issuing new guidance. Wolf.
All right. Thanks very much, Athena Jones, reporting from New York. Let's get some more on the breaking news. We're joined by the White House Coronavirus Testing Czar, Admiral Brett Giroir. Admiral, thank you so much for joining us. I got a lot to discuss with you, including your special area of expertise. But let's begin with the current reality. Cases are surging around the country as we head into Thanksgiving this holiday next few days. What advice do you have, Admiral, for Americans who are trying to figure out how to celebrate on Thursday?
So thanks for having me on, and you are absolutely correct. We are at a critical and very dangerous point in this pandemic where cases are rising in nearly every jurisdiction, and our hospital capacity is getting, it's really getting challenged by this. What I would say is what we've said many, many times is that it does not have to be this way, that we know from many regions, many cities in our country, we know from the United Kingdom and in France, that reasonable protections, like wearing a mask universally when you cannot physically distance, avoiding those indoor crowded places, especially bars and restaurants, using good hand hygiene and using appropriate testing. You don't need to close down the economy. You don't need to close down hospitals. You can keep schools open. But if you don't do these simple things, all those grim statistics you talked about are going to be a reality. And we are very concerned about that.
Admiral, explain why you're now telling Americans that if they must travel, and CDC is recommending against traveling on Thanksgiving, they shouldn't necessarily, folks who have to travel, they shouldn't necessarily even bother getting a coronavirus test first. Why not? Isn't one test better than no test at all?
Sure. Well, you do make a good point, Wolf, and there is probably some benefit. Obviously, if you're tested and you're positive, then you shouldn't travel at all. That's a good thing. What I think I want people to understand more importantly is that a test that's negative today doesn't mean you're going to be negative tomorrow or the next day or the following day. And what we really want people to do is follow those CDC precautions, like limiting your gatherings if you can, distancing even in the household, wearing a mask when you can. You know, you don't need, I'm a Cajun, we'd have 10 people in the kitchen cooking for 12 hours. You got to stop doing those kinds of behaviors, have smarter choices, whether your test is negative or not. That negative test is not a free pass to do risky behavior.
So I just want to be precise, Admiral. You're not saying we shouldn't get a test if we're going to travel. You're saying go ahead, get a test, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the next day you might wind up positive.
So in most areas of the country, an asymptomatic person who has not been exposed has a very small percent chance of having a positive test. So you have to weigh that, right? And in fact, getting on the geeky side, if you're completely asymptomatic, you haven't been exposed, you have no risk factors, that test being positive is more likely a false positive than a true positive. So there are a lot of complications. Let me get to the bottom line. Wolf, I know you like the bottom line. It is certainly not wrong to get a test before you travel, because if you are positive, you need to stay home. No questions asked. But if you do get a negative test, it doesn't give you a free pass. All the things the CDC says, all the things we talk about is still in force. And this is a really dangerous situation we're in right now. It is a dangerous situation, but it's reversible. And I will say we are starting to see just the glimpses of the mitigation effects in certain Midwestern states and in other states just beginning to start taking an effect. I'm not saying we've turned this around, because we've not, but we know that mitigation works, and we're starting to see those glimpses of success just starting. If we keep this up, we can turn the curve within the next 2 or 3 weeks. And as you pointed out, we're going to have a vaccine as early as middle of December that tens of millions of Americans can get. This is not forever, but we've got to be diligent.
All right, so just to be precise, even if you get a test and it's negative, you shouldn't travel either, right?
Well, the CDC advises not to travel, and we know that's not realistic for many Americans. They want to travel, and you need to make a better choice. But the safest thing to do this Thanksgiving is not travel. There are millions of people in airports, et cetera. If you do travel, please look at that CDC website to know how to be safe, wash your hands, wear a mask, distance, all the things that we told you about, and especially in your household gathering, particularly if they're vulnerable individuals.
You made some news today, and I want you to elaborate for our viewers. You announced that the Trump administration is actually considering shortening the recommended quarantine time for COVID-19, right now 14 days of quarantine if you've been exposed to someone. How long would the new recommendation be for quarantine?
So I didn't announce it. I was asked a question at a news conference whether the administration was considering it, and the answer is yes. The CDC is reviewing data. As you know, it's quarantined for 14 days. Half of people become symptomatic by day 5. That's when the virus is present, and there's a long tail of very low probability afterwards. So the postulate is, and the CDC is looking at it, it'll be driven by data, if you get a test at day 7 or day 10, particularly, can that shorten your quarantine from 14 days to perhaps 10 days? This is not an announcement that it's safe, but we're looking at that. We know a lot more about the virus now than we did beforehand. And remember, people are much more likely to listen to a 10-day quarantine than they are a 14-day quarantine. So if we can shorten it safely with no risk, because we have a quarantine plus a test, We have lots of tests available now. That might actually improve our public health responses. So we're looking at it. It is not an announcement it's happening, but yes, we're actively reviewing it. And the CDC team is modeling it, looking at data every day. And it may change or it may not. It just depends on where the data and the evidence wind up.
Very quickly, because I know you got to run, Admiral. When are you going to start briefing the incoming Trump, the incoming Biden team, I should say?
I really look forward to doing that. Public health is not a matter of politics. Many of the people on his team we work with on a regular basis already because they're in the public health community. We're putting together materials and putting everything together. We're not as far apart in our approaches as the reports are. We're investing in point of care testing. We want rapid tests. We're using the DPA. So I'm really anxious to do this in a professional way. These are colleagues in the public health community, and I look forward to working together with them.
So you think in the next few days?
I hope so. I really do expect that. They were waiting for the signals. I don't control the signals, but we've had lots of informal signals that everybody's ready to talk, and my team is ready. We put together materials, and we want to transition this as effectively as possible. I think we've built a good foundation for the Biden administration to continue to build on for the rest of the time that the pandemic's here. We look forward to working with them.
57 days to go, as I keep pointing out. Admiral Brett Giroir, thanks for everything you're doing. Good luck. Have a safe and a happy Thanksgiving. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Wolf.
Coming up, despite urgent warnings against holiday travel, some Americans are planning to fly over Thanksgiving. We're going to take a closer look at the safest way to do that during this pandemic.